So there is only one set question, and the rest of it is all for you to talk about whatever you wish to talk about. But something that obviously we would all like to know is, why do you think it is important that Greenham is remembered for subsequent generations?
That's a good thing to think about. I think because there are beginnings that we had at that time of a way of trying to make statements, I think, as a crowd of women that just got larger and larger, basically, as the days and the weeks went by. And I think we were at a stage, probably collectively at that time, of having had enough with the way in which the world was going, and how we could see the threat of nuclear war very strongly, having been brought up with those images as children through the TV programmes and things. And I think we were frightened of that, and also very determined to stop any use of any of these missiles in our localities or where we were. And I think the actual presence of Greenham was very evident. We were aware of it, where we all lived, in Berkshire or Oxfordshire or whatever. It was one of those things that had its own presence. And I think that it was a good focus for a fight back against another repetitive threat of war, and into trying to get a better future for everybody. So I think that's why it's so important. I think individually it was important, because I think it was a way in which women could start to speak for themselves. And I can remember for myself that it was the first time that I was able to have the strength at that time to say, this is for women, and this is what we are going to do. This is what we are not going to do with others or with men, or to be swept along in something that we didn't understand, but that we made up our mind about these things. We got in our cars and we drove off, and we lived in a haphazard and somewhat exciting way with other women to make our voices heard. And well, maybe that was it. Maybe that was the first occasion in which there was a collective voice by women pushing back against the establishment and all that had gone before it. And it made us what we are today. I think it was, you know, so it was sort of in the individual way it was very important, but also on the political and the social fabric of our society at that time, it was the beginning of change. And people saying, no, we do not want to have this here.
No.
So I think that's the importance of it.
Absolutely. And everybody I've spoken to sort of feels that it was profoundly life-changing. And how did you find yourself there in the first place?
I came across obviously articles about the, you know, the opportunity to get to Greenham, but was really focused by my good and loving friend Jo, who, another woman who was much more determined than I was at that time to attend, and had started to go to Greenham quite regularly, and I got swept up in that process. And from that process, we then got ourselves into a routine, as many women did, about weekends spent travelling across, walking around, singing, pinning stuff on the fences, and being very determined to make as much of a nuisance of ourselves as we possibly could, particularly when any of the missiles or the lorries were being pushed through on the roadways. So it was an extraordinary experience, actually. I mean, some people have obviously thought about this more, but this has come very freshly to me. And I can remember that the sort of energy levels were high, and they were all about a sort of sense of knowing that we could make a better world for our children. And there were children there, and I have come across other women who, known that I'm having this interview with you, Flo, who are always saying that they were the children with their mothers, and that they've never forgotten the experience of being there, and you know, the ways in which some women were sleeping over weekends and living in quite difficult circumstances, and how, you know, all the children were somehow encouraged to be a part of all of that as well, as being this next generation up. It'd be interesting for you to actually catch hold of some of those people that were children. I think one of the emails that I've given you, I think Ember is one of the children that was there at the time.
Yes, certainly Becca Morden, who was one of the founders of this project, was there as a child. And it was her mother's involvement which I think drove her.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it, to see whether they actually carried on with the same sense of wanting to make the world a better place and a more peaceful place.
Yeah.
I mean, before Greenham, of course, there was C&D and there were the long marches and again, very strong push. Yeah. And I mean, I can remember that we all wore badges, C&D badges. And we're very proud of that.
Yeah.
I can remember being quite young, actually, when there was a major C&D march going up the road towards London, and I was not allowed to go and join in, and I remember being so furious about that. So in a way, perhaps Greenham was another opportunity to be able to do my own thing and push on. And I never stopped, you know, it's like a breakthrough. It's like, you know, just getting out away from this shell of whatever it was that you were supposed to be as a woman and beginning to feel that you had some collective strength to make things happen and to change things.
So did you meet many other women at Greenham who you became friends with?
I think everybody seemed to be a friend. You know, if you worked within, if you were linking up within a group of women, it was just great fun.
Yeah.
But it also was very cold and sometimes very dark. So, I mean, I think we all needed each other with the ones that had torches or whatever that could find their way around back to the beginning and wherever anyone's little mini or whatever it was that you could sort of get into and get yourself back home. But if we were involved in parties anywhere, you could get involved in lots of discussions with other women about what was going on. And it was a real interest. There was no doubt about it.
Yeah. So what was it like going when you used to go? Talk me through a typical visit.
Well, I suppose we all used to drive together, or the husbands would bring us and drop us off and look very mournfully over this sort of ditch area. And they weren't allowed to go any further than that, and they'd look very sad, but go off and not argue about it. But if we went on our own, we'd park somewhere crazily and just sort of walk as hard as we could until we got to one of the gates, and then we'd sort of settle there and work out what we were going to do.
Yeah.
And then we'd go and look at all the artwork and sort of travel along and see all the self-expression from people of what they had drawn or pinned on board, and there were obviously reporters and journalists, people, you know, of all sorts that would be recording or filming the activities of people. And then if there was any action going on anywhere, we'd probably tag on and join in that. And then we'd get together. Everybody seemed to link arms or hands at least once during the day and sing. And that would carry on round as far as you could, right round the edge of the fences. And then we spend all our time just going as far as we could, just joining in with people and sharing the experience. And it was just ultimately fascinating, you know, it was just great. And people went to greater extremes than us. I mean, there were women that were there, and you may be talking to some of them, that were our heroes, you know. We suddenly had women that were heroes.
Wow.
So, you know, you'd just stand in amazement that they were able to break away from their traditional roles and suddenly just start this new way of living and this new life. And
what was it that you saw as heroic in these women?
Well, because it's quite difficult to see how frozen women's roles were after the Second World War. So I'm talking about the 50s and very early 60s, that there was a very much more of a stereotypical lifestyle. I mean, I've got a great understanding of the parents that brought up us as children after the war, because it was a dreadful thing that they went through. And they were just concerned with stability and security and shelter from what was the most dreadful experience for them as young people in themselves. And I think the way children were brought up was and we were a resource, we were a valuable resource, because obviously, you know, we were the future and we were in good education, and that was all of that preserved well by our parents.
Yeah.
But it was sort of very much held and controlled, and we were loved, but we were also held together as being a part of what they saw as right or wrong.
Yes.
And I think eventually in the early 60s, it just blew. I mean, it blew.
Yeah.
And I think Greenham is there as one component of that.
Yeah.
The other component would be the self-expression through music,
yeah,
and through activities,
yeah,
and feeling freer generally, mm, about what we do. And I have to say, while I lived on the outskirts of Oxford in a small collection of houses, myself and one more friend started the Open University.
Mm.
And then from that, my friend Jenny and myself were the first women to go out to work, out of at, yeah, least a dozen or so friends. We broke that mould,
yeah,
about wanting our own careers,
mm,
and wanting to further our qualifications,
yeah,
and to go off.
Yeah.
And I can remember the shock that sort of radiated around,
mm,
about the fact that there were two of us that had got jobs and that we actually had a Mini or a car or whatever, or something. We had to push it down the road when it broke, and that we could manage the children and we were caring and it worked well and it wasn't, mm, going to be a dreadful thing.
Yes.
And so the world of work became, mm, you know, a beginning, mm, for all of us. And with that, greater realisation about bigger things.
Yeah. And did you work while you were at Greenham?
I was just, it was very exciting actually, because,
yeah,
I was just at the point of getting, yeah, my first job.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because I think, I was thinking back about this when we were going to talk together, that my father died in 1979, which was a huge impact on me. He was a brilliant man and I learnt a lot from him.
Mm.
And then my mother had died before then anyway, a few years back.
Mm.
But then I began to do all this educating and changing, mm, and moving forward in my life. And I'd actually been offered a job with social services,
mm,
in a health centre, which was also multidisciplinary with doctors and,
mm,
psychiatrists. And I was starting that job in the September, and during the summer,
yeah,
I was at Greenham as often as I could. So,
yeah,
it was like the whole thing,
yeah,
was just this great big move towards,
yeah,
a change in my,
yeah,
life.
Yeah, yeah.
And from that job for 2 years, I then went off to Oxford Brookes and got,
yeah,
my qualifications and came back, and then ended up working at Broadmoor for a bit.
Gosh.
And then travelling around, as you know, to,
yeah,
all these various specialised,
yeah,
centres to do work. It's been,
yeah,
fascinating, absolutely,
yeah,
fascinating. So that, within a few months,
yeah,
there was this sudden sort of breakthrough through the changes in my personal life,
mm,
into a,
mm,
new era. So that's what's so important about Greenham.
And that was instrumental in that whole transformation.
I think it was.
Yeah.
I think it was the very basic move from leaving home,
yeah,
in the day and getting in my car and going off into this big adventure with other women,
mm,
that started my own belief in myself and what I could do.
Wow.
So, yeah, yeah, big.
And
I'd do it again. People would have to...
If only.
I said, you shouldn't have this on tape, but,
yeah,
I was saying a couple of days ago that I'm getting to the point with all the stuff that's going on at the moment of,
yeah,
tearing my clothes off and running down North Street naked. But I thought, well, no, I'm afraid it wouldn't be casting the same dash that it would have done years ago. So,
oh, I think it'd be even more impressive. If only.
Yeah.
So while you were visiting Greenham, were there any particular actions that you were involved in or witnessed?
I think I witnessed a couple of full on actions,
mm-hmm,
and sort of got semi alarmed, I suppose,
yeah,
about the, you know, the pitch at which things,
mm,
had got to.
Mm.
And I did also witness the exhaustion of some women that,
yeah,
had been there for long periods,
yeah,
of time. And I mean, it wasn't an easy place to be. It was a very cold and muddy,
mm,
and wet,
yes,
establishment. It wasn't sheltered, you know, not particularly by the gates, because they were,
no,
all sort of fairly,
yeah,
readily available. It was,
yeah,
it was barbaric, I think,
mm,
at times. And again, I hadn't come across that so,
mm,
so much so. But I think there's quite an interesting spot online of the art that,
mm,
was developed at Greenham. And,
yeah,
I think, you know, that in itself was extremely interesting.
Yeah.
That women were thinking in their terms of being the ones, together with guys, of having new young generations that they wanted to protect,
yeah,
so that they were trying to think ahead as well as for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that came across through the collections of women that got together and talked, or,
mm,
would stop and have a hot drink or bring,
yeah,
their own stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it was like being in this huge group rather than anything smaller, yeah. but I accept that some women who were staying there for days on end would have their smaller groups, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. their reference yeah. as every day started,
yeah.
and they'd move about and then come back to that. But it was yeah. just seemed a big group, basically.
Mm-hmm. And what would you talk about when you would stop with?
I think the world and the sense in which war at that time was such a dreadful thing that our parents had been through that we just really didn't want anything else. And I think it was the exploration of what it meant to be a woman, you know, that there was this breakthrough between not thinking about it and just functioning,
yeah.
and then suddenly with the education, that the beginnings of real education that we all had at that time, into looking at things from a different ways, you know, yeah. through that education. So it was like education and experience through yeah. the Greenham thing that yeah. I think certainly changed me.
Yeah.
And I think there was, as I say, there were many women who had not gone off to university mm-hmm. and had children mm-hmm. before their learning.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the catch-up group mm-hmm. of women who were saying, this isn't good enough, we're not going to be happy with this. We've got something here that we want to prevent yeah. and we want to become as politically astute as anybody else and have a say in what's going on in the world. And that was through education and learning and a bit of freedom for ourselves as who we yeah. were.
Yeah.
So all big things, I think.
Yeah. I've been struck in some of the things I've read about how much legal knowledge was picked up along the way.
Mm.
And do you think there was an appetite in general for people to know how to deal with what was in front of them and gain a huge amount of practical skills in dealing with some very specialist situations?
Yeah. Well, there were women who were heroes that would somehow be able to bring into the group or wherever people were what we were able to do and what we weren't allowed to do. So there were those, you know, the protest barriers of our behaviour and how we needed to be cautious about this but could be a little bit more energetic about that. I mean, I was thinking about whether there was any really nasty tumbles with the police. Maybe there were, but I wasn't witness to that. They all looked a bit shocked, to be honest with you. And you know, I think there were moments, obviously, I wasn't party to, but certainly I felt there was an unease. It was quite difficult for the way in which we reacted to each other, the authority and those who were not happy with what was going on.
Yeah.
And I think if we went to parties and things, women would definitely gather together and then swap notes about things. And there would be a lot of women going through college, or, you know, we'd have people who were teaching sociology, you know, they would be talking about society and stuff. So I think it was a real cerebral mix of people.
Wow.
So we weren't just there having fun, you know, we would gather together and actually start to swap notes about what needed to be done and how you did it.
Really?
So I think it was. I think, you know, going away from the women's thing, I think there was generally much more of self-expression by everybody, by walking and marching and starting off with the big placards and the coverage of all the things that we're trying to fight back against, which was basically a third world war that would finish the world.
Yeah.
So it was very, very, very serious. You know? And we all believed it. You know, we all believed if we didn't do this, the world would end, because, you know, who could survive? You know, the Hiroshima thing. Who could survive several of those exploding around the world? You know?
Well, nobody.
Nobody. No. Nobody. And it was to do with the occupation of the Americans.
Mm.
And actually, I think my parents didn't like that either.
Yeah.
And I think it just sort of washed through into our generation that we didn't want to be an occupied country with Americans sort of somehow planting themselves in us. I can remember my parents talking about how they felt that we would become much more exposed because of their presence in Britain at the time after the war. And I think, you know, when you look back at all that, it all sounds very old-fashioned.
Yeah.
But actually at the time, I think it was... it was a nervous time. I think there was a lot of nervousness after the Second World War, and I think it just carried on for a decade or two, and we soaked it up, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going off the subject.
No, not. It is all around it. Well, it's all part and parcel, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it happened at a certain time. And you get the sense that it could have happened at any other time. I get the sense that it couldn't necessarily have happened at any other time, as in it was it was dependent on what else was going on, you know. And you've been talking about the way people felt in general and the mood of a generation, and I think that, and a very distinct threat. So I don't think it's off topic at all.
I don't know whether you've come across any of the other women that you've interviewed about, whether they actually had a political family they came from anyway. I mean, you know, in my family, they knew a lot.
Yeah.
And so I did grow up with that realisation about things. You know,
yeah.
They were very engaged and involved in things like that. But I mean, there was an inheritance as well as perhaps wanting the stability.
Yeah.
There was this generally you'd have these discussion points probably quite late at night about things that people felt, their viewpoints about certain things. So
did you feel quite at home among the discussions at Greenham?
I loved it. I still do.
Yeah. Yes, I can tell.
Yes, very, very interesting, actually. Yeah. I mean, again, last night over the dinner table with this German chap, it's, you know, I find it really fascinating to hear how he feels about living here and all the changes that are going on that are hard for people.
Yeah.
You know, it's a restless world and one in which we're getting more aggressively on guard about, I think.
Yes, I think you're not wrong there. Did people disagree much when they were talking at Greenham? Or was there a sort of consensus, an idea sharing?
I didn't come across much disagreement. I think it was so busy that there really wasn't. I mean, I didn't sit down for ages and do nothing. It was just a sort of slogging around and looking at things. I think if people were camping there in the evening by their fires or whatever, they may have, you know, sort of delivered their ideas and thoughts a little bit more about it.
Mm.
I think there was a disagreement between husbands and wives.
Yeah.
I don't think some husbands quite... I think I was quite lucky.
Yeah.
And I think Jo was quite lucky with her husband. But I think it could have caused a lot of splits up at home, I think, about... And that would be a brave thing, would be to continue to keep going with a negative backdrop.
Yeah.
But then those women would then have to be even more determined, I think, to break that mould and perhaps potentially go back to somebody who's a little bit cross. Who would know? I didn't know of anyone, but
no,
it couldn't have been an easy thing for some women to have got themselves away and over there from their family environments. It was tough on children.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you'd have to wrap up, and there's lots of Wellington boots, and I think they got a lot out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you would know.
Yeah.
But I think that there had to be a time when enough was enough.
Yeah.
And I suppose that was starting off of my work view about how, you know, children are as important as adults and there has to be a balance between... you know, the needs of bringing smaller children or children that got to get to school the next day or something and don't have the sleep or whatever it is.
And were there a lot of children there when you were there?
There were, there seemed to be, I mean, I don't know whether it's because we had taken my daughters with us that they collected together and played or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, my daughters were in their mid-teens, so they weren't young.
Right.
So I think, early teens.
Yeah.
So I think they were able to sort of cope.
Yeah.
But I think if it, you know, for smaller kids playing in those environments, I think they were very well protected and loved.
Yeah.
But it must have been exhausting. They must have been exhausted when they were actually going back, and as everybody else was, I think.
And did your daughters look forward to going?
They did. They were absolutely boggled about it, I think. And I mean, they're now working in London for charities and things. You know, they've carried on again with these sorts of. Ideas and thoughts and been through their own educations and their own pathways, but I don't know whether I could see them going up and joining anything now. I think maybe there was a bit of a warning in there that it's blooming hard work and they're not too sure about whether they could cope with the... I can remember funny experiences, you know, like one of them was convinced she got worms in her boots, do you know what I mean? And it was dark, we'd only got one torch. We're trying to sort of empty this boot of sort of water and convince them that they were all right. There was nothing in there really. And, you know, all those sorts of things that come with the sheer struggle of wet and cold. And,
yes, yeah.
I wouldn't have liked to have... I don't know. It would have been hard to have looked after smaller children, I imagine.
Yeah.
That you were well looked after.
Yeah, but. Yeah. And I know you are obviously very interested in the arts.
Mm.
I'd be interested to know what you think and feel about the role that the arts played at Greenock.
I think it was very important.
Mm.
I'm amazed at... the need to draw and to place objects of sort of interest up on the wire fences. I scrolled through the online stuff and you could see there's a lot of the... you can scroll through, can't you, all the art that was there on the wire fences and the things that women pinned up. And I think... I don't know, it's very interesting. I think they were well photographed. I think photographers, I think maybe the men or whatever, or maybe it was women, were seeing them as something that was important enough to place alongside the photographs of the women around the edge of the camp. So, I think, for me, it was very important, but I think for other women it was as well. Mm. Self-expression.
And what made you pin a picture on the fence?
Well, because I think at that time radiation and nuclear war was not a good thing to be facing for any of the unborn generations, you know. Can you remember when Chernobyl happened? That was later, wasn't it?
It was, yes. I think there was still a camp at Greenham when it did happen.
Yeah.
It was in the late 80s.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember there was a lot of alarm then at that point, wasn't there, about people were moved away from...
Yeah.
The reactors and things, and we all knew where these reactors were, and people would sort of look at the drift of the radiation from that and where that was going. Yeah. And you know, now you talk about it, and think, oh my goodness, you know,
yeah,
it was a bad thing. And I think it drifted across Scotland, or there was some
all of Europe got a little dose,
didn't it?
Mm.
So I think for those of us that were at that age. Of having children and bringing them up, it was a sort of certain thing. So, so I did the unborn child, and that was great, and it was nice to see it on the TV the next day or the day after. I can't remember, it's blur now, but it popped up, and so did many of the other things. So it's nice, it's been nice to look at that.
Yeah.
And I spotted myself in one of the shots there.
Yeah.
Looking very thin and youthful. Heaven only knows, it would be great to have those days back again. There you go. Metamorphed into the wiser person.
And I mean, how much of the fence was accessible? And I mean, you say you used to walk the perimeter.
We walked around as many bits of the fence as possible.
Mm.
And I have to say, because it's such a long time ago, I can't remember whether we had to turn back and go back round again.
Yeah.
But it was the whole day's occupation was just gradually setting off.
Yeah.
And then gradually working our way, joining in with the singing, coming in, having something to eat together, having a sandwich we bought or something.
So would there be people clustered around the gates?
Yes.
And then would there be many people in between? Or did that...
Yes.
Even...
Oh, there would be, you know, just... I can't remember a time where you would be walking where there wouldn't be anybody.
Really? Gosh.
Do you know the actual numbers? It'd be interesting.
I don't. I think the estimates, the official estimates for things like Embrace the Base are about 30,000, but I don't know on a regular weekend.
Yeah. It was a sort of, there was always a sort of time when you knew you needed to be round the fence for the, you know, for these moments of singing.
And did the character change as you went round, or was it you know, were there different groups of people and different types of discussions, or did you just meet a mix of everybody all the way around?
We'd bump into people we knew. And then you'd begin to get to know the people that were there that you'd seen last time you'd gone there. So yeah. There's a sort of an ongoing relationship with people.
Yeah.
And I think despite the seriousness of the situation, we did have quite a few laughs with people about things, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was just a great sort of opportunity to sort of feel free, yeah. I think, and to be expressing how we actually thought about things.
Yeah.
But I think you came into the serious bits where people were really focused, organised, and ready for action.
Mm.
And those were people that were, well, role models for us, you know. I mean, they would be that the hero. Mm. Women that were out there and had committed themselves for a great deal of time.
Mm.
And we'd be there to sort of almost support them. So it was sort of like the difference between the support groups, yeah. and the people that were there that all were really focused on what they needed to be done.
Mm.
And then I think because the TV was around, there'd be a lot more discussion about the Greenham Common action on the TV. But nowadays you can have thousands of people marching in London, and we've been part of that ourselves, and you get 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, there's no way in which any activity of any sort of people trying to say something different from what the establishment is saying that is focused upon properly.
Yeah.
And I think that's just dreadful.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Because I think, you know, you could get back and you could be getting these discussions going on in the evening.
I think people are scared to discuss things now, though. I think there's not as much sort of free and frank discussion about ideas without people taking offence, perhaps. I don't know.
Yes, I think that's an interesting thing.
Mm.
I think it's there, but I think it probably comes and goes. I mean, like things are going on in France at the moment.
Mm.
That's become a sort of routine, hasn't it? That at the weekends people go and demonstrate.
Yes.
And it seems as if it's an accepted part of what will happen if there's disagreements within society. And there's a bit of give and take over that.
Yeah.
I think we're all quite a sort of fairly rigid sort of nation, and it takes an awful lot for people to, you know, go really sort of bonkers about it all. But I think when you do, I mean, I'm sure you've been to all these big demonstrations, and you gradually see the train filling up more and more packed, and you're getting out together with people who feel the same. It's an amazing experience. So in a way, who cares about the TV and who cares about the news? You know, you've had this day where it's been pretty special for you, and that you're glad you've gone. I mean, that's the thing. Mm. I can remember with the war in Iraq thing. We went over to Hyde Park to hear the speeches and everything, and we ended up trying to get out again afterwards. I can remember being sort of shoved over this sort of huge fence with some poor blokes on the other side just standing there waiting to sort of catch this lady going over the top of this thing. And, you know, you suddenly realise, don't you, that this has to be for the youngsters as well. If you get stuck in a corner somewhere, that they know how to get out. Whereas,
Yes, there is something very sustaining, I suppose, about being somewhere with other people for a purpose.
Mm.
For a purpose.
I think so. Yes, and it's a hard thing to leave, isn't it, then, when you feel that you've got together. And
How long were you visiting Greenham for?
Well, I think it must have been through the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, it's... About six weekends.
Were your daughters in school at the time?
This would be the summer, so they would be either looked after or, you know, they'd come. Mm-hmm. So they'd be, and they didn't come as often, but it seemed as if it worked quite well, and there wasn't any, I can't remember any issues about looking after them. I mean, they were just that little bit older and hopefully more sensible. But who would know? I am starting to talk to them actually about it all, and trying to get their memories. And, you know, one of them was here the other day and we were talking about it, and she was just sort of remembering what she wore and you know, all the sort of experience of that. So I mean, I'm sure you'll hopefully interview some younger
people. It would be interesting,
sort of balance your sort of conversations about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then I went off into the brave new world, really, of whatever it was that I was in, and again, surrounded by people in the course of my work who wanted to help other people and do their best for other people in very extreme circumstances. You know, I went from one, you know, very tough prison environment into the world of caring for very sick children. And I mean, the wonderful bits of that are that you gather the experience of how people struggle through adversity, how they manage and how you manage them if they're in need of, you know, some form of support and help and shelter. But it's also that you gather together for yourself the fact that it is an incredibly complicated world and there's no right way through.
No.
What there is a way through that maybe can achieve something that's a bit better than what you've got already. But now I don't know what the right way through is.
No.
With things, but I know that there must be something better. So how to make that leap between one thing and the other? Who would know?
So are all your memories of Greenham positive ones?
Oh, amazingly so.
Yeah.
Other than the mud and the wet and the cold.
Yeah.
Getting back was weird, I think. You know, coming in home and after an experience of that day. And
what was that transitioning like back to...
Quite hard. Yeah, it was like it's like bright lights. Suddenly you're back into this established world, and you've got your role within that, and you're not just this person drifting around supporting something that's bigger than you, but you're back into this world of everyday life and things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'd do it again, you know. I think, you know, if you could zip back, I mean, there would be no question.
Yeah.
Perhaps for even longer.
Yeah.
I think now I know so much more, and I've soaked so much up, how the world runs and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've been in the company of people who know a lot.
Yeah.
That, you know, that would be back there again, but probably with a better tent and a blow up bed. And I think barbecues are better these days, aren't they?
I think you're not the first woman who's sort of talked about that transition being a difficult one, and the intensity of being somewhere like Greenham, which is hard to follow on from, and a certain addictiveness of that level of emotional intensity and sometimes adrenaline, depending what people are doing.
It's very biological as well, because I think women do gather together, that I think they have that there's something about groups of women that are spontaneously helpful.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be sexist about all of that, because obviously men have their things that they offer too.
Yes.
But I do feel that, you know, with the groups of women that I'm with now and the friends that I make, that in a way there is a supportive understanding between women. I mean, even now being a grandmother and things, and I sort of understand what it's like to be a young mum, and you know, those understandings are handed down, aren't they, between the generations. And I think just working with families and seeing the range of people coping and people not coping, that you know, it brings with you this. I've always wanted to feel that I wanted to support people so they can achieve their best at whatever they do. That's at work as well. You know, the belief. I mean, I can remember with some parents who were worried, very, very worried about their teenage children, that I'd say, all you need to start to aim at is that they have a roof over their head and there's someone there for them when they come home. And start of all those basics, all the basics, and then gradually pull them back into the family environment as best as you can. always try and make sure there's a roof over these kids' heads. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, that's me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and probably goes back to the drawing and everything else that, you know, we owe so much to young people and we need to look after them, don't we? And maybe we did that. That was the beginning of that as well, seeing that generations to come needed a better world, didn't they?
Absolutely.
And we've got to fight for that again.
Unfortunately, we do, yes. I think another thing that's come up before is the importance of it being a woman-only environment and the sort of unique energy that that gave Greenham. I'd like to know your thoughts on that.
I think it was very important. Yeah, I think otherwise it gets to the point where we're always like a couple or there's always somebody there that's somehow directing, you know, your worldview. And I think that it's such a huge subject, this, because there's a part of people in the 60s of women who thought that they were free and everything, but actually probably weren't, you know, when I'm thinking of like physical appearance and you see films at that era where you can see that women are still very frozen within the roles that they have. But another part of it, I'm sure, I'm pretty convinced, was because of this education. I mean, I was lucky, I went to a grammar school and I got a good education. But I think it was a way in which suddenly women wanted to learn and wanted to bring into themselves things other than, you know, as I've said earlier, you know, having a fairly settled day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And you could see it in your parents, you know, they wanted you to be settled.
Yeah.
And they wanted things to be stable. And they wanted everybody to be doing things that they should be doing. You know, and they were loving, you know. I mean, I can only speak of myself. I mean, I'm not generalising. Everybody has different experiences of their parents. But I can remember one, one moment where I told my mum and dad that I was going to start the Open University.
Yeah.
And they were horrified. They were horrified because they thought I ought to start bringing my kids up and not concentrate on the Open University. And I've said to Nick, you know, how that's changed now. Because so many women that I know of now, we've all gone off and we've done these courses and all this training and stuff, haven't we? So there's been a massive shift, I think, in knowledge and women collectively making sure that they're sort of equal as everybody else.
Yeah. So the aspiration for education was not a given. That was a change.
It was just sort of fear, I think, that, you know, I mean, there is this model, isn't there, about the fact that we're better at home because we're concentrating on the next generation. And I can see that. I can see it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we all need to learn. We all need to never stop learning. I mean, I am learning now.
Yeah.
You know, I never stop learning, and I think, you know, that's been the sort of shift, I think, for women.
So do you think Greenham encouraged women to go out and learn things for themselves?
Well, yes, and I think, you know, when they've had all this stuff on about the suffragettes, you know, we've had all of that, and then we've had how suddenly everybody's realised that women did an awful lot of work during the wars, you know.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it all stopped again, you know, and here we were propagating the next generation. And So, I mean, I think it just there's just one big push and everybody was saying, enough is enough.
Yeah.
You know, we want more, want more.
It's been interesting, the suffragettes being in the news so much, and more than one of the women involved in the project, of the volunteers, has noted the parallel between the amount of media attention that the suffragettes didn't get at the time, or the negative attention they got at the time, and the negative attention that the Greenham women got, and wondering whether there'll be a rehabilitation of Greenham women in the future, whether there'll be a anniversary that allows them to suddenly give it a sort of acceptable positive spin, if you know what I like. So at the time, obviously, suffragettes were portrayed relatively badly in the press, or they were seen as a threat, and it seems that Greenham women were also portrayed in a negative light sometimes. Do you think there'll come a point when they'll realise how great it was, or how important it was, in the way they have done with the suffragettes?
Yes, I don't, you know, I cannot see, I cannot see a breakthrough totally at the moment. I think what concerns me is that I think in our take up of education and learning and careers and work is that we've actually given ourselves an awful lot to do. I think we need to sort that out, and we need to relax a bit, I think, about ourselves and what we're at. I think a lot of women are very supportive of the green movements, aren't they? And we went to Iceland and Greenland a few months ago, and it was awesome, but it was also scary because the icebergs were breaking off and drift. We actually got hit by one in our boat, our ship. Gosh. But they're breaking off into the ocean, so you're going through the middle of these massive, great big blocks of ice. And these are the issues that we should all be thinking about now. And all this rubbish that's going on about which country we belong to and who we're going to trade with, it's going to, you know, if we don't watch it, we're going to lose sight of the biggest enemy, which is going to be a changing world and the weather and everything else. I mean, it just stared you in the face there. You know, we saw glaciers melting at the bottom and flowing into the sea. And it was awesome. It was awesome because there weren't any people. There was just the planet. And that's the next fight, will be to get everybody focused, I think, on stopping this terrible destruction of what we've got to keep us all going. And, but I think that doesn't have to be just women. It has to be men. But maybe, you never know. Women could sort of pioneer several things. About that in their way and have a bit of a fight back about how we could live a little bit more economically.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly a strong environmental theme at Greenham as well, wasn't there? I think, yes, the destruction of the earth is a fairly, you know, fairly environmental thing, regardless of what causes that destruction.
I would say that at that time was as big a threat as we have now in facing the fact that the world will be destroyed by global warming. But the politicians aren't, they're not bigging it, are they?
They're not. I wonder why. Do you know why?
It doesn't suit their interests, does it? They just live for what they can get out of each moment of power. You get that feeling. You don't see people with a collective conscience about what we do.
No. And I wonder where it went, if you know what I mean. I certainly get the impression that my parents, you say, talked a lot about ideas. And I think my generation were almost embarrassed to be passionate, as if it was naive. And I think that's changing again now. I think dispassion is hopefully giving way to it being okay to care again, it being cool to care again.
Yes. Well, I think politics has had it almost as it is now. I think that, you know, because of this inequality, this big gap between the few that have got a lot and the most of everybody else, it's just getting by, some better than others. And I think it's not fit for purpose anymore. No doubt about it. You know, it's only the crazed biggie people that are in at the moment. There's nobody there with any real thought. I mean, I was heartbroken when Obama left, because, you know, I felt that he was quite hopeful about a more thoughtful a way through. But I think this is going to be the next big issue for people. Not now, but certainly in the next decade or two. No doubt about that.
Soon. Before we get totally off topic, is there anything else about Greenham that you would like to?
I just want to say thank you to all of you for reintroducing it to us. It's been lovely.